Penguin Random House Audio presents The Middle Out, The Rise of Progressive Economics by Michael Tomasky. Read for you by Adam Barr. Neoliberalism forthrightly aimed to dismantle the social state. It is not only social regulation and redistribution that are rejected as inappropriate interferences in markets or as assaults on freedom. Also jettisoned is democracy's dependence on political equality. Wendy Brown. Preface. It's all one argument. Conservatives have convinced most Americans that the free market means personal freedom. And it does, for those with the means to eat at high-end locavore restaurants or purchase the right to skip the lines at Disney World. But that isn't most people. Most people live with a constant, low-level anxiety about potential job loss or unexpected bills. An ongoing economic anxiety survey, sponsored by National Public Radio's Marketplace, found in October 2020 that more than half of all Americans were fearful of losing their jobs, and nearly half couldn't cover an unexpected $250 expense. Yes, this was during the pandemic, when economic anxiety was certainly nudged higher. But this anxiety has been a fixture for many Americans since the survey began in 2015. Millions of Americans live in towns where the free market has produced for them the career options of working at the dollar store or selling a little Oxy. What sort of freedom is that? This book is about changing that. Changing, as Joe Biden was fond of saying when he unveiled his ambitious economic plans in the spring of 2021, the economic paradigm. Through a combination of historical exposition and present-day reporting, I hope to show readers two things. First, how we got into this predicament where so many people put faith in an economic arrangement that immiserates them. And second, that there are people, from the president and his aides down to activists and economists and folks in the foundation and nonprofit worlds, working hard to move the country to a better place. The Biden administration has made some commendable progress in changing the economic circumstances of Americans, even if inflation understandably dulled the luster of the biggest GDP increase in almost 40 years and record employment gains. 6.6 million jobs created in 2021. But the immense difficulty the administration faced, even within the Democratic Party, in passing the legislation it did, and the failure, as of this writing, to pass the Build Back Better bill thanks to one senator's opposition, showed that the battle of ideas will be a long one. And so this book will conclude with my views on how liberals can win this fight. Here is a truism of our political discourse that is not widely enough recognized. The right thinks in terms of morals, while the left tends to see matters through an economic lens. That is, ask someone on the right what ails America, and he or she will almost certainly begin with a discussion of moral decay. We've lost our way, left God, abandoned the old values of thrift and hard work that made America great. Ask someone on the left the same question, and she or he will much more likely start by citing statistics on wage stagnation and the transfer of wealth from the middle class to the rich over the last 50 years. It's not hard to see why, to your average person, the right-wing argument is more compelling. It's emotional. It resonates. Everyone in the world thinks things were better when they were young. Nearly everyone is patriotic in a basic, uncomplicated way. Most people are religious to one degree or other. So the right's rhetoric along these lines hits home. And the hypocrisy argument doesn't work. No matter how many evangelical preachers are caught in love nests, no matter how much un-Jesus-like hatred some of them spew from their pulpits, this perception will never be dislodged. So the broad left, by which I mean everyone from the House members who make up the squad to the more centrist senators, can't win a morals argument. True, Joe Biden's deeply held Catholicism has helped bulletproof him against charges of radicalism. Nonetheless, religious morality is not the terrain on which the left will win political arguments. We can win, though, on economics. Here's why. People have two lives, material and spiritual. Modern liberalism is ill-equipped to make people's lives spiritually better, but it can make people's lives materially better, with better wages and health care, less fear of financial crisis, better roads, a faster internet, and more. If liberalism can deliver those things, I believe it can cobble together an electoral coalition that can win most of the time. But we can't do it solely by citing statistics. We, more precisely, elected Democrats, because they're the ones who have the megaphone, can win by tying economic policies to the larger ideas that Americans care most deeply about: democracy and freedom. We happen to be deep in a historical moment when our democracy is under assault from the right as never before, and when freedom has been grotesquely redefined to include the right to get other people sick. Democrats have to fight these fights, but they also have to recognize that these aren't separate fights from the battle to reimagine economics in a way that delivers fewer benefits to the rich and more to the middle class. It's all one argument. Economic inequality and concentration of wealth and political power in the hands of the few weaken democracy and limit freedom. Liberalism tends to treat these as separate issues. Conservatism, as I will show, has tended to fuse them into one argument, and it has done so to considerable success. It's time for Democrats to seize that high ground. This book is my attempt to help them make the case. Introduction. How do you change an economy? Heather Boucher remembers when it struck her that the work she was doing had taken a more serious turn. An economist who grew up in Washington State, she earned her Ph.D. in economics from the New School for Social Research, a center of progressive thought since its founding in 1919. Boucher had joined Joe Biden's presidential campaign staff in March 2020, just as the coronavirus pandemic was upending the nation's daily life and its politics. She was one of a relatively small number of younger economists who had, since the great meltdown of 2008 to 2009, she was 38 when the global economy nearly collapsed, produced work that challenged her profession and asked probing questions about how most of that profession had failed to see the collapse coming. She had been a staffer on Hillary Clinton's 2016 campaign, and in the wake of Clinton's devastating loss to Donald Trump, she worked on a range of fronts, through her think tank, the Washington Center for Equitable Growth, through her writing, through dinners and seminars she helped arrange, to get more Democratic elected officials to pay closer attention to new economic ideas that were bubbling up from this younger cohort of economists. Ideas built around what Boucher calls the care economy. These were ideas related to government support for initiatives like child care and elder care and family leave and higher wages for caregivers and a generally modernized social safety net, the kinds of ideas that the U.S. government and the Democratic Party hadn't pursued aggressively in the decades since the mid-1970s, when the dominant thinking in economic policy was that the government should get out of the free market's way. Over the months of the 2020 campaign, she watched, encouraged, as candidate Biden's rhetoric changed from talking about restoring the Barack Obama era, which was his main pre-pandemic theme, to something much more far-reaching, summed up in his phrase, "build back better." She was co-chair of the campaign's Economic Policy Committee, helping to coordinate input from some 700 different experts. After Biden won, in late November 2020, she was named one of three members of Biden's Council of Economic Advisers, CEA, the policy team that presents any president with a menu of economic policy options to confront whatever crises he faces. Another body, the National Economic Council, NEC, generally guides policy after the CEA narrows the options. The NEC is usually considered the more powerful of the two, But the CEA wields enormous influence too.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?